So you've got, you just see the sequence of this happening. Can't you just see that that's all kind of coming together fairly quickly? Now, in February 15th of the next year, so again, we're like 2 months later, you know, December 18th to February 15th, we're 2 months later, and it's going to be Zechariah verse 1-7 up through Zechariah 6-8. You're going to have 8 visions. It's one long night for Zechariah. One night he goes to bed, apparently, and God wakes him up 8 times and brings him into the presence of angelic hosts and shows him things, images. I'm going to run through them very quickly. 8 images that Zechariah is going to see. And each of these has a pertinent message for these people. Again, you can get a little bit of eschatology or end times out of this or what's going to happen in the future. But most of what you see in the book of Zechariah up through chapter 6, verse 8 is for the exiles that have returned. We can get doctrine from it. We can get insight. We can learn the character of God. We can see what God did in history. We see how God revealed Himself. And there is, like I say, a little bit of future eschatology we could draw on. But basically, this was talking to these people right now, right here in 519, again, encouraging them and telling them, this is what's going on behind the scenes. Oh, you've built this little temple that's called the Temple of Zerubbabel. He says, it's a little temple. You're back here. You're trying to rebuild your city. They don't even have walls yet. There's still opposition. But understand, all that you see is not all that there is. There's a lot happening in those spiritual dimensions. God is not going to show them these things and encourage them. So here we go. Number one is a man among the myrtle trees, is what's titled in the NIV. Verse 1. On the 24th day of the 11th month, I already read that, it says, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah. Verse 8. During the night I had a vision. Now, this is the one of 8. And there before me was a man riding in a red horse. Now again, I want to teach this verse by verse and get out of here about 12 o'clock tonight. But I'm going to I'm going to have to just say some things that, you know, you can argue with me if you want. I mean, not during class. I mean, we can ask questions and stuff and argue with me later. But, unless I get very, very heretical. This man right here, I'm going to tell you, I believe is the Son of God. It's a theophany. It's a manifestation of the Son of God, which we would call Jesus or the Christ. He's the Lord of hosts. He's the head of all the angels. And just, you know, we could talk about that later. It's a theophany, I believe. But nonetheless, and there before me was a man riding a red horse. He was standing among the myrtle trees in a ravine. Behind him were red, brown, and white horses. I asked, what are these, my Lord? The angel who was talking to me answered, I will show you what they are. Then the man standing among the myrtle trees, so there's an angel with him, and then there's a man among the myrtle trees. Two different people. And again, there's all kinds of people in this, or personalities in this vision. They're the ones the Lord has given to go throughout the earth. So he sees these red, brown, and white horses. They go throughout the earth. And they reported to the angel of the Lord. Now, the man among the myrtle trees is probably called the angel of the Lord, which now is a huge declaration. This is the Son of God. But nonetheless, they reported to the angel of the Lord, who was standing among the myrtle trees, we have gone throughout the earth and found the whole world at rest and in peace. So, they've gone out. These angelic hosts on their horse have gone out throughout the world. Remember, Judah has come back to the land. Now these angels have gone out and they report to the man among the myrtle trees, which I believe to be the Son of God. Or at least, if you don't agree with that, he's the head angel in this vision. And they say, the world is at peace and rest. And of course, isn't that just what we all want? Is peace and rest. You'd think so. But notice this angel Lord, or the theophany, what he says. Then the angel Lord said, Lord Almighty. Now this would be him talking to another member of the Trinity, God the Father. Again, in my theology, you can argue that if you want to. Lord Almighty, how long will you withhold mercy from Jerusalem and from the towns of Judah, which you have been angry with these 70 years? They report back and say, peace, there's safety all around the world. The Persians, Darius, and as we know, we talked about this last week, Darius began to reign right around 521, right after a period of where false Smyrnas had come in, and there was chaos in the Persian Empire. Cambyses was before false Smyrnas, and then Smyrnas came in. So the empire is kind of unraveling. But within 24 months, Darius snaps things in line, the current Persian king. And so if this vision took place 24 months ago, we don't know who the real emperor is. We don't know who the king is. We've got problems with Egypt. We've got problems here. The whole empire seems to be unraveling. But now, on this night, when this vision takes place, what's going on in the world? The angels come back and say, there's peace. It's organized. There's not a problem. Peace and safety. The angel Lord speaks to God the Father, or to God, and says, how long will you withhold mercy from Jerusalem? We don't want this peace. There's judgment that we need to take care of. We can't have peace. Kind of a different twist on this, isn't it? The angel Lord's upset about peace on earth. So the Lord spoke kind and comforting words to the angel who talked with me. What would those kind words be? He's upset because there's peace when his judgment will take place, and he speaks kind and comforting words. He said, we'll take care of this, all in good time. Then the angel who was speaking to me proclaimed this word. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I am very jealous for Jerusalem and Zion, but I am very angry with the nations that feel secure. And the Hebrew word for very angry, or phrase would be, with a great anger, I am angry. With those nations who think they've got peace right now. They think they've maneuvered their way through my judgment, but not so. I'm jealous for Jerusalem, although they look small, I'm out going to get these other nations. I was only a little angry, but they added to the calamity. Therefore, this is what the Lord all says, I will return to Jerusalem with mercy, and there my house will be rebuilt, and the masonry line will be stretched out over Jerusalem, declares the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty says, thy towns will again overflow with prosperity, and the Lord will again comfort Zion and choose Jerusalem. So there it was, a message of, I will judge them. I'm upset that they're thinking they're secure. I'm going to shake them, but I'm going to bless Jerusalem. So that's, again, a good message that he had to write down. The second one, the four horns and four craftsmen is what it's called here in the NIV. Verse 18, then I looked up, and there before me were four horns. Now, horns represent power. Many times in visions, that in Daniel especially, they represent some kind of a king. And again, once you have a king, it represents a nation or an empire. This is probably something like the Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome for the four empires. Again, we could debate on what those would be. But that would be an easy way, just for a night, to go through it quickly. I asked the angel to speak to me, what are these? What are these horns? He answered me, these are the horns that scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. Okay, now if you say scattered in the past tense, is that like Egypt, Assyria, you know, Babylon, Persia? I mean, what is it? But anyway, there's four empires. The main, and that's really not, has no value necessarily on what those four empires are in this. The point of this is, although I do want to make sure we're accurate, the point of it is these scattered Judah. Then the Lord showed me four craftsmen. What are these coming to do? So you see these four horns, or these four empires, whatever they are, and they at some point had scattered Israel. And then all of a sudden in the vision, here comes four craftsmen. Think of construction guys, four construction men with their chainsaws. It's like, well, what are these? These are the craftsmen. Well, what are they going to do? He says, the answer, these are the horns that scattered Judah so that no one could raise his head, but the craftsmen have come to terrify them. And throw down these horns of the nations who lifted up their horns against the land of Judah to scatter the people. They're coming to saw these horns off. They're done. So there'll be some kind of angelic construction crew coming to remove these horns. So that's the second vision. These empires, they've done their job. Don't worry. Jerusalem's not going to have to go get them. God is going to come cut them down. Chapter 2, vision 3. Again, you can see how this will all be encouraging for these people at this time, for Zechariah to come out in the morning and say, hey, I had a word from the Lord. I had eight of them. Then I looked up, and there before me was a man with a measuring line in his hand. Again, they're building, a lot of building going on here. That's why you got some construction images. But the measuring line, that's a tape measure. A man's got a tape measure. Where are you going? He answered me, to measure Jerusalem, to find out how wide and how long it is. Then the angel who was speaking to me left, and another angel came to meet him and says, run, tell that young man, Jerusalem will be a city without walls because of the great number of men and livestock in it. He's measuring, and the man's out there, the angel's, you know, doing an acting job here or whatever, but he's measuring, how big is this going to be? Well, we're going to put a wall here, put a wall here. And here comes the man running, no, don't measure it. Don't put a wall up. This thing's, you're going to just tear it down. He says, it's going to be a city without walls, not without protection, not unguarded, but it's like, this thing's exploding. You've got suburbs, guys. Don't be putting walls up. So again, the image is there. They're looking at their little temple, looking at their little remnant, and the angels are saying, don't be thinking about where you're going to put the streets. This thing's going to explode. And it goes on. You can see more about that. Then the angel is speaking. He says, go run. Okay. Verse 5, I myself will be a wall of fire around it. That's going to cover it up until the year around 458 when Nehemiah comes to rebuild the wall. And even then it's exploding. God says, I will protect it. You don't need a wall. Just grow. Notice right here, you don't need a wall. Just let yourself grow. I'll protect you. Just explode. Verse 6, Come, flee the land of the north, declares the Lord, for I have scattered you to the four winds, declares the Lord. In other words, now he's calling more people back. We need more people to come back. Come, O daughter of Zion, you who live in the daughter of Babylon, for this is what the Lord Almighty says. It goes through and talks more, that we'd read more of that, about that, about how he sees his people, Esther, for example, and her family, are still in Babylon. They didn't make the commitment. Those that have come back have made the commitment, but they're discouraged. They've been not doing it for 16 years. Now he's encouraging them, and then from this he says, hey, let's get everybody else back. Come on, get on board. Again, you're going to have that remnant that returns, and has to lay the foundation for others to follow, so you can make some applications from that ourselves. Go to chapter 3, vision 4. Clean garments for the high priest. This is a kind of a cool one. They're all pretty cool. Verse 3, I don't know if that's a proper hermeneutic term for scripture. That's cool. I just shut it, thinking some real scholarly people get on my website and they listen to like my audio or my video and go, this guy is cool. The Bible's not cool. It's like, he must not be very well trained. It's like, nope. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then he showed me, guess who? Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Lord. And now you've got one of the few more important courtroom scenes with heaven. And you've got the angel of the Lord, which I think is a theophany. You can argue with that, but you really can't. I mean, I don't want to be rude, but I mean, the only reason people argue with that is they just don't understand it yet. The angel of the Lord is a manifestation of the Son of God in his pre-incarnate state. Joshua saw him. I mean, Joshua the warrior saw him, but nonetheless. Here's Joshua, the new high priest, who's connected all the way back to Aaron, standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right side to accuse him. The Lord said to Satan, the Lord rebuke you, Satan. The Lord who's chosen Jerusalem rebuke you. So, I mean, I wish there was a little more dialogue in here, but you're right in the middle of the courtroom scene, and all you see is Joshua and Satan standing there to accuse him, pointing at him, he's not pointing at the people of Israel. He's not pointing at, the line of David. He's pointing at the priesthood. This is the priesthood who didn't listen to Jeremiah. These are the priests who threw Jeremiah in the cistern. They kicked Jeremiah out of the temple. These are the priests who defied the temple. These are the priests that are described in Ezekiel as being complete idol worshippers. They've been rejected. Clearly they were rejected. And so that's apparently what Satan would be saying. And the Lord's response is something that we should be excited about. Because just as surely as Satan accuses us, the Lord's defense of Joshua is not going to be, yes, but he's cleaned up his life. He's made a new commitment. He's doing his daily devotions now, saying, get off his back. It's not Satan accusing and the Lord trying to say, come on, I need something to work with. Give me some good deeds so I can defend you. Look at the Lord's defense of Joshua, which is your defense also. The Lord said to Satan, the Lord rebuke you, Satan. The Lord who's chosen Jerusalem, rebuke you. Is not this man a burning stick snatched from the fire? It's like, Satan, I rebuke you because I chose him.
He may be a bum, but he's my bum.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a stick in the fire. He says, he's burning up. And he says, I took him out. Pull him out. There you go. Say, what's wrong? He's my man now. In other words, the whole defense for Joshua goes way back to Abraham was chosen. David was chosen. Now Joshua's being chosen. Now Joshua, interesting, was dressed in filthy clothes as he stood before the angel. Now the word filthy is a huge word. I mean, it's not dirty. It's not grimy. It's porta potty filthy. It's the image of what you would have if someone's in a porta potty and some guys come by, they're joking around, they tip the porta potty upside down on him. It's not manure filthy. It's not out working in the cow barn filthy. It's porta potty. That's enough of that. But that's what the word means. The word is as, that's what it's referring to. Now Josh was dressed in filthy clothes, meaning it's human waste is covering him. It's like he's covered with his own problem. As he stood before the angel. Again, remember, it's not just Joshua. Joshua's not just, it's not that he himself is this type of man. He's representing the priesthood. And the priesthood has completely defiled themselves. The angel said to those who were standing before him, take off his filthy clothes. It's like, the Lord rebuke you, Satan. The angel says, give this guy some new clothes. Now, what's the problem? He's chosen. Looks good to me. Let's move forward. Say there. And now watch. I still want more dialogue. And Satan said, it's not there. It's not. You don't even. He's gone. It's like, I wish there was more. But of course, the case is closed. It's that simple. Then he said to Joshua, see, I have taken away your sin, and I will put rich garments on you. I have taken away your sin. I will put rich garments on you. You're back in my plan. Then I said, put a clean turban on his head. See, now Zechariah is now speaking. Put a clean turban on his head. So they put a clean turban on his head and clothed him while the angel of the Lord stood by. The angel of the Lord gave this charge to Joshua. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Now notice again, stay with me on this. You can't take doctrines and go crazy with them. Right here. If you will walk in my ways and keep my requirements, then you will govern my house and have charge of my courts, and I will give you a place among these standing here. Meaning in the courts of heaven, apparently. But notice again, he puts them back in. Now remember, Aaron was chosen, the line of David was chosen, but they both drove it into the ground where God had to remove them and discipline them. Now he's brought them back, says, I give you back my promise. And now listen, could Joshua mess this up? Indeed he could. Again, we're not talking about losing your salvation here, but he could take this whole plan. He's not on autopilot. You're never just on autopilot. You still got to respond to what God is doing. Going on in verse 8. Listen to High Priest Joshua. Okay, he goes on more. We read more there. That's good enough. Verse 4. Now remember, there's two key players in this whole episode right here. Joshua and Zechariah. And this can become a confusing a vision, and people will try to do a variety of things with it. And again, you feel free. But again, stay focused on what we're talking about. We're talking about 520. We're talking about even Haggai, and now Zechariah is talking about these two men, Joshua and Zerubbabel, because they are the leaders. They represent the restoration of the promises. The promise of David, the promise of Aaron. Well, here we go. Verse chapter 4, verse 1. Then the angel who talked with me returned and wakened me as a man is wakened from his sleep. He asked me, what do you see? So how does he... Zechariah dozed off. Man, it's late. You know, he's been up watching vision. He dozes off. He wakens him up and says, hey, what do you see? I don't know. I'm asleep. I'm not seeing anything. Well, look. I answered, I see a golden lampstand with a bowl at the top and seven lights on it, with seven channels to the lights. Also, there are two olive trees by it, one on the right of the bowl and one on the other side. Okay, so here we go. Let's get rid of the city of David here real quickly. Now, I don't want to bore you with this, but I do want to make a little introduction to it here. There's a lampstand right here. And on the top, there's a bowl. And on the bowl, there's these little pinches of wicks. You know, where they have they pinch the clay and the little wick would sit in there. Again, different interpreters and archaeologists will try and draw this and explain it. But anyway, these are little flames now coming up of each of these. And now coming from there is that there's a tree on this side. I don't have much room for my tree. I'll better label that. There's another tree over here. And now I'm getting my dates all messed up here. There's a tree on this side. And coming from this tree, these are... Well, let's read this here. That's what we got so far. What do you see? I see a lampstand with a bowl at the top, seven lights on it, seven channels to the lights. Also, there are two olive trees by it, one on the right, one on the left. I asked the angel who talked to me, what are these, my lord? Or my lord? He answered, do you not know what these are? You don't get this? No, I have no idea. What is this? No, my lord, I replied. So he said to me, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord Almighty. What are you, Almighty Mount, before Zerubbabel? And then he goes on and talks here a little bit. These two right here, there's going to be a line, a connection here of oil. And this almost sounds blasphemous. If you don't understand this, you go, what? That can't be. But indeed, this is true. There's a truth to this. It's the Bible. There's some kind of truth to it. This is an olive tree. Olives produce oil. Okay, it's going to be burning here. These channels come up here and they're feeding into this bowl of oil. And so, where does the oil come from? It comes from the Holy Spirit. It comes from God. He is the source of our oil. He's the seas. It's like, yeah, but this is Joshua, and this is Zerubbabel. It's like, what? This is the light that is coming into Jerusalem, but it's coming through, again, remember, these are two men that represent the line of David, the line of Aaron, which represent promises or covenants. It represents these are the anointed ones that God has chosen to do the work. And it's true today too, if you'll accept it that way. If God does the work, but He chooses, well, we all have gifts, we all have a place, but He is going to work through us, and that oil is going to come through us. In other words, if Zechariah doesn't do it, he is the anointed one. If he doesn't do it, the anointing is not going to come through him. It's not going to happen. Just like if you refuse, I talked yesterday in church, we talked about hamartiology. There's sins of commission, there's sins of omission. Sins that you do that you should have done, or sins that you don't do, or things that you should have done that you don't do, omission. And as I think about this, and you probably do in your own life, sometimes I get going so fast, doing so many things, trying to do my stuff for God, that I end up sinning. I end up getting too aggressive, or I end up, you know, embarrassing myself. It's like, okay, enough. I'm just going to quit and sit down. And I'll just wait. It's kind of like, no, now you're in a sin of omission. But you can't run too fast, and you can't sit down. What? You just got to keep walking with God. I mean, there's no place that I'm just going to quit and wait. You got to keep going. And the reason the sin of omission occurs, where you don't do it, is because you are, in my example here, you are the anointed one. You're anointed for this job, this assignment. If you don't do it, it don't get done. And these two guys, Joshua and Zerubbabel, are the two men that are, let's read this here now. You understand kind of what I'm saying? I know it's God. But He's working, He's telling these people, I'm working through the line of Aaron and the line of David. That's where the oil is coming from. You cut them off, you cut off the oil. You've got to have these men here. And it's not because they're great people. It's because, just like we saw in chapter 3, verse 1, I've chosen him. He's the priest. He's the prophet. He's the king. He's the governor, whatever. Okay, let's go back. And this is cool right here, verse 6. There, I said it again. Verse 6. So he said to me, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. Not by might, not by power, but by my Spirit, says the Lord Almighty. Zerubbabel, you're here just for the Spirit to flow through you. It's not going to be because you're wise or you're great. It's because the Spirit of God is going to move through you. And then he says, what are you, O mighty mountain, before Zerubbabel? And the mighty mountain could be, again, here's another great image for our own lives. But in this case, the mighty mountain could be that opposition that they're facing of trying to build this temple, of trying to bring the people back. The angel has just said, it's going to be a city without walls. They go, well, there's not that many people here. We need a wall to protect ourselves. No, he says, it's not by might, it's not by power, it's by my Spirit. Then it says, O mighty mountain, what are you before Zerubbabel? The opposition. Before the anointed man Zerubbabel, what is this huge opposition like? Well, look at what, this is great. You'll become level ground. Then he'll bring out the capstone to the shouts of, God bless it, God bless it. This opposition that Zerubbabel's facing, what is it like to Zerubbabel? Let me think. It's like level ground in front of Zerubbabel, because he is going to plow right through that thing, crush that mountain to asphalt, and bring out the capstone to finish off the temple. That's what Zerubbabel is going to do. That's what it's about. Okay, next. Then the word of the Lord came to me. The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple 16 years ago, and his hands will also complete it in 516. Then you will know that the Lord Almighty has sent me to you. And there's Zechariah's sign. He says, you will know that I'm a prophet when the same man who laid the foundation sets the capstone. And then you'll say, and you'll put my book with the canon of Scripture, that man was a prophet. He nailed this down exactly like he was going to come. Verse 10, who despises the day of small things? Men will rejoice when they see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. The plumb line, you know, that's another construction tool. You hang it like this, you know what your plumb line is, and it's straight. Zerubbabel's building the city. Then he goes on and talks more. Verse 12. Again, I asked him, what are these two olive branches beside the two golden pipes that pour the golden oil? Now listen, we've done pretty good, I think. Zechariah's going all the way through this vision. Okay. But hey, what are these two trees, these two branches? Well, I don't get what they're... Is that like God or something? He says, hereby, do you not know what these are? No, my Lord. So he said, these are the two who are anointed to serve the Lord of all the earth. Again, I think it's Joshua and Zerubbabel. I think that you get thinking, well, maybe it could be Enoch and Moses. It's like, why? We're talking about 520. We're talking about Joshua and Zerubbabel. That's what I think. Because the angel doesn't give them names. He says, these are the two who are anointed. Chapter 5. Everything sounded pretty positive, but realize they've been in Babylon, a pagan country, a pagan culture, a pagan economic system with pagan religions. And again, there's some corruption. And these people grew up there. Even as we talked about Zerubbabel's daughter's signet ring had Persian and Babylonian symbols on it. Why? Because it was probably made and she brought it with her, which is a sign of this chapter right here. They brought with them their pagan ways, which included their economics. I looked again, and so that's what this is about. Chapter 5, verse 1. Again I looked, and there before me was a flying scroll. Now we've all seen that. You know, he asked me, what do you see? I answered, I see a flying scroll, 30 feet long and 15 feet wide. That's, you know, it would be different measurements, cubits, but so it's huge. This is a supernatural sign. It's like, yeah, back in those days they had 30-foot long scrolls. It's like, no, it's like a flying scroll. And we're going to find out as we read this, it's got writing on both sides, which that is unusual also. They'd write on one side unless they're short scrolls or something. They'd just write on one side. But this was writing on both sides. So people, whoever wrote this has crammed as much information on the scroll as possible. And he said to me, this is the curse that is going out over the whole land. Now, again, when God gives his law, and this is, again, kind of basic. Don't get too, like, weird on this. If, we talked about this before. If God says, this is what I want to do right here. If you want to stand in the way of blessing, you go do these things right here. Now you're in the area of blessing. But if you want to rebel against God, you go over here, and now you're in the area of cursing. It's not like God, again, be careful how I say this. It's not like God is picking and choosing. I'm going to curse you, curse you, curse you. I'm going to bless you, you, and you. It's like he says, this is blessing, this is cursing right here. Go ahead, begin. And even in the law of Moses, he says, I said before you today, life and death. Death, life. Then he says, you remember the rest of the verse? Choose life. It's like, well, is it going to be A or B? The answer is A. Go ahead and write down your answers. The answer is A. And that's what he's saying. And so when it says there's a curse, it's not like God has like sent this out at somebody. It's just like when he says, for example, Adam, don't eat from the tree. If Adam obeys, he's happy. Things are good. If Adam disobeys, bad things happen. It's Adam, which one do you want? There it is. And so this curse, this scroll, this huge scroll crammed with information. And what kind of information is on that? Curses. It's the law of Moses. It's not like super spiritual. What does this mean? It's the law of Moses. You rebel, this is yours. This is the curse that is going out over the whole land. For according to what it says on one side, every thief will be banished, and according to what it says on the other side, everyone who swears falsely will be banished. So thieves and liars. Again, think business. Okay? They're setting up a new economy. They're setting up a new country, a new government, and they brought this back from Babylon, and that's the way they do, you know, way of doing business is to be a little deceitful, do a little bit of lying, do a little bit of cheating, steal a little bit. The Lord Almighty declares, I will send it out and it will enter the house of the thief and the house of him who swears falsely by my name. It will remain in his house and destroy it, both its timbers and its stones. He says, who wants this? He says, there's a curse flying over Jerusalem right now. Remnant, thanks for coming back. I'm glad you're here. But listen, if any of you think about being a thief or a liar, understand, we're looking for you. There's a curse right now waiting for you to start lying. And when you do, we're going to come and tear your house down. Okay. Go ahead and begin business. Now, he said this next one. Then the angel who was speaking to me came forward and said to me, look up and see what this is that is appearing. Of course, Zechariah says, what is it? He replied, it is a measuring basket. Again, that would be something they would measure wheat in or some grain. It's something, again, in economics, in the business of trade. And he added, this is the iniquity of the people throughout the land. Well, these are your remnants. They've come back. Yes, but they brought back improper measuring practices. Improper business. Then the cover of lead was raised. So you've got some kind of a wicker basket with a lead lid on it. Very unusual because the lead lid in many cases, would just crush the basket. So again, a lead lid, meaning this is serious, not just a lid or a cover, it's a lead lid. It, again, it just for me, it pops in my mind, that's not going to make the connection, but like the abyss, the lid on the abyss. If this thing is sealed up, the lead means we want this covered. It's not just cover that up, we don't want to see it. We don't want this thing to get out. Well, look at this. Then the cover of lead was raised, and there in the basket sat a woman. I knew it, it's the woman. Yeah, there it is. Not a man. The man's trying to keep the woman in the basket. See, that's now we get to Paul's teaching right there. Now I'm being facetious. Then the cover of lead was raised, and there in the basket sat a woman. He says, this is wickedness. I'm not going to go on anymore. I got to go home tonight. No, again, it's nothing. It's just interesting. This is wickedness. And he pushed her back into the basket and pushed the lead cover down over its mouth. So it indicates a struggle. She's trying to get out of the basket. He lifts the lid up, see what's in here? And this woman, this iniquity, again, just as identified as woman, starts crawling up out of the basket. And he pushes her back down, covers it back up with lead. It's like, that we do not want that loose in Jerusalem. Now, there may be a correlation. Again, it may be a direct fit. But I'm just making a suggestion. Because this is going to be sent back to Babylon. When you get to Revelation, the woman is out of the basket riding the beast. And the woman may be, I believe it has to do with false religion and false business practices or government, religion, business, all coming together. Again, I'm just throwing that out there. That it's debatable. It may not even be connected. It may not even be connected. But listen to the rest of this vision. Pushed her back down in there. Then I looked up, and there before me were two women with the wind in their wings. They had the wings like those of a stork. So now these are they're women. Now listen, we see like in medieval times, we see a renaissance. We see baby angels. We see women angels. The Bible knows nothing of female angels, nothing of baby angels. In fact, very few about angels with wings. There's only a couple references of angels with wings. But interesting right here, this is the closest you're going to come to female or women angels. But the problem with this is they've got the wings of a stork, and a stork is an unclean animal. Okay, so I mean, do what you want with it. But the image that I'm getting is there's this wicker basket with a lead lid with iniquity, a woman on the inside. Then two other women come, and they're not human women because they've got wings. They've got the wind in their wings. But their wings are like storks, which screams out, these aren't necessarily holy angels. These are some kind of creature that is unclean and knows what it's doing. They had the wings of those of a stork, and they lifted up the basket between heaven and earth. Where are they taking the basket, I asked the angel who was speaking to me. He replied, to the country of Babylonia. They're taking this thing back to Babylon where it came from. To build a house for it. That would be a reference to temple, not just a house, but a place to set this up and, in a sense, worship it or center their religion, their lives around it. When it is ready, the basket will be set there in its place. So with that idea right there, it's saying something about a future fulfillment of this, what is taking place right here, which then opens up, maybe it has something to do with Revelation, some popping in there. Especially when you type Babylon, take it back until it's ready, a temple, nonetheless. What God is saying there, I want this out of Jerusalem. Number 8 vision, this is our 8th vision, chapter 6. I looked up again, and this was very basic. I looked up again, and there before me were 4 chariots coming out from between the two mountains. Mountains of bronze. Now again, people trying to guess what these mountains are. It could be Mount Zion, Mount Olive, something like that. That may be it. But the important thing here is bronze. Bronze speaks of judgment. In the temple or the tabernacle, the things in the outer side of the temple, outside the building itself or outside the tabernacle itself, the bronze altar, the bronze basin, places of judgment. When he came into the temple or tabernacle, it's gold, God's presence. When Jesus returns, his feet are like burnished bronze. He's trampling the nations in judgment. Bronze, most often, when it's used symbolically, it speaks of judgment of some sense. So when it says bronze mountains, it's the mountains of judgment. The first chariot had red horses, the second black, the third white, the fourth dapple. All of them powerful. Ask the angel who was speaking to me, what are these, my Lord? The angel answered, these are the 4 spirits of the heaven going out from standing in the presence of the Lord of the whole world. The one with the black horse is going towards the north. The one with the white going west. The other one with dapples going south to Egypt. Then the powerful horses went out, and they were straining to go throughout the earth. And he said, go throughout the earth. So they went throughout the earth. Then he called to me, look, those going towards the north country have given my spirit rest in the land of the north. The whole vision began, how long will we have to put up with this? The land is at rest, but we are not. By the time we get through these, the last vision almost goes full circle. It's like, okay, God, then now the angel here says, I'm good, this is good. They're going out to judgment. And this now would maybe even indicate, of course, in 520, but throughout the rest of history, God is going to go out and subdue those nations. Jerusalem is going to be lifted up, and the Jews are going to be back in their place doing what they're supposed to do. Chapter 6, I'm going to have to pick this up next week. Is that okay? Is this okay? You guys all right with this? I mean, we're not moving like very fast. We didn't even get out of 520. I was boasting. I've been covered 4 years this time. I covered 4 months.